would also say that you have to find ways to elevate your confidence. And that doesn't necessarily mean it happens inside the workplace. I think you've got to plan a life and nurture a life that gives you moments where your confidence raises up. So find the things that you're really good at and do them.
Hey there, Success Buddy. Welcome to the Leaving Nowhere podcast with me, Candace Willey. I created this podcast for you. I've spent my entire life learning lessons the hard way. Through those experiences, I've realized that all roads really do lead to success. Sometimes we just need better directions on how to get there. Join my guests and I in learning how leaving nowhere can help you get to exactly where you want to be. We'll share stories of success and the various methods we've used to help us get there. Let leaving nowhere be a compass in helping you achieve your greatest desires. So your journey to success starts here. Joining our Leaving Nowhere podcast today is a trailblazer that has not only had an incredible career in the retail sector as the former CEO of Hot Topic, she continues to influence leaders in the retail and restaurant business as an advisor and a board member. During her 11 years as the CEO at Hot Topic, the company was recognized in Forbes, Fortune, Business Week, and Fast Company magazine, including multiple years of appearing on the 100 Best Companies to Work For list. This amazing lady and trailblazer has been recognized by several organizations for her leadership, including Top 10 CEOs with Vision by Adweek, and was named as one of the best CEOs in America by the Institutional Investors. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Betsy McLaughlin. Betsy, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for asking me.
I have been looking forward to this conversation for weeks. Betsy has a unique gift for building and influencing strong performing companies, and what I value most about her, a thriving employee culture. So to get us started, Betsy, I would love for you to share what led you to the retail business.
You know, I never really thought I was going to go into retail. I went to school to be a doctor and needed a job because I moved out of the house early. And there were only two places that would hire a 16 and a half year old with no experience, basically restaurant or retail. And so I rode my bike over to Fashion Island Mall, which is in Newport Beach. And the first building I ran into was the Broadway Department Stores, which subsequently was bought by Macy's. And went in and applied, and they hired me. And so I was in retail my entire time in college, working nights and weekends, and kept getting promoted because I loved it. And it was great. It was flexible. I liked working with people. It was easy from a commute standpoint. So I never thought for one moment that it was going to be my long-term career. I thought it was just going to be the place where I could earn some dollars to pay the rent. I wound up with a finance major as well. And when I decided I didn't want to go into medicine and was interviewing with multiple investment banks, and I was on the selling floor of men's furnishings, probably folding dress shirts and hanging ties, when a phone call came in from the CEO of the Broadway. And I only knew him from the picture that was on the wall in the break room. Big portrait of this guy. His name was Cal Rowley. We never saw him. We never really heard from him, but we certainly saw his picture as we were having our break time. And he got me on the phone and he said, "Young lady, I hear good things about you and I want you to consider retail as a career." And I said, "What? That's not in my plan. I have a full plan. That's not my plan." And he said, "You know, very few people have a reputation like you have when you're working in a store. So I just want you to think about it." And he said, "And we'll bring you down to the service building. We will give you a raise. You already have money in your 401k. You've already accrued vacation. You really should think about this. And you wouldn't have to move to New York." And I hung up the phone and I was just sort of spellbound over the fact that the guy from the break room, the picture in the break room, actually just spoke with me. And I thought to myself, yeah, why not give it a try? So that's how I landed in retail. Purely the universe working its way, I think.
Yeah. So what I appreciate about that story is it explains a lot about your connectedness to people in the field and your desire to stay close to them. I mean, you had a CEO reach out to you and I would say kind of prod you to go in this direction, which is fantastic. So explains a lot about your passion for culture and people. So starting your career at the Broadway department store, as you just shared, a very established organization, what made you take the leap of faith to move into smaller companies such as Miller's Outpost and Hot Topic?
Well, I put together a plan when I was 21 years old after I decided that I was going to go into retail. And it was a personal plan. I had heard somebody speak, and they had said that if you don't take control of your own plan in life, things will not happen for you. And I took that to heart, probably a little too much to heart, and I did a plan for myself that looked at every year of my life up until 29. I guess when you're in your 20s, every year is really significant. And then every couple of years after 29, and then when I got to 40, I just did these five-year jumps. But at 21 years old, I put together this plan. The plan had, it was very simple. It had my age going down the left-hand column. And then going across the top were career, financial, assets, personal life. And so I had all of these categories. And it was a grid. And I just filled the entire thing out with what I thought I needed to do to do this plan. One of the elements of the plan was I knew I wanted to lead something. And in retail, because I was in this retail mindset, I wanted to be a CEO. And so I knew there weren't a lot of women CEOs. And I knew there were not a lot of CEOs from studying CEOs that had merchandising, financial, and operating experience. I also knew there weren't a lot of people that had public company, private company, startup, specialty department store. And one of my mentors early on said to me, if you really want to be selected as a CEO, you need to check off as many boxes as possible so that you will have wider experience, you will have deeper experience than others. And so on that list were those types of organizations. And so I had the Broadway. I wanted to work for a high growth specialty store, which was Miller's Outpost. And then at the time that Hot Topic came along, it was a startup. So everything seemed to sync as I was making these decisions about where does my career move next. And as people were recruiting me, I thought I kept going back to my grid and my plan. And where does this fit in? I don't want to duplicate. So when Dillard's called me when I was at the Broadway, I said, no, thank you, because I already had department store experience. And so I architected this very thoughtfully as I went through my entire career, up until the point where I became CEO.
When I think about vision, and I'm blown away. So first of all, anybody who is listening, I'm going to emphasize that she had a plan for herself at 21. You know, a couple of other key things that you said that are incredible are you studied CEOs. So you knew that was your end game. And you built into the vision for that through what your plan specifically was. So that I did not know that about you. And that is incredible. And what a great way to keep your eye on the ball, if you will. It's like, this is what I'm working towards. And how do I continue to pivot as I need to get a little bit closer to the ball? So such an incredible and powerful statement.
So I still have the piece of paper. I carry it with me. It stopped at 50. Problem. I don't know what I thought I was going to be doing at 50, but I suppose when you're 21 years old, 50 feels like 80. But I carry that piece of paper with me just to remind me that it's really important to know where you're going, to continue to revisit what your plan is, to continue to pivot as necessary, and to check in with yourself.
You know, one of the things I would like to hear a little more about is you mentioned personal on there as well. And I think as I reflect on my own career, the hardest thing for me to balance has been my priorities, both professionally and personally, at one point in time or another. One was always tilted, you know, and in my belief, that is probably part of the balance, right? Is there's going to be a greater demand in your career at different times and then your personal life at others. So talk a little bit about how you balance that piece.
Well, it's funny when I was doing the plan, because I had this vision of being a CEO and a leader. And in my mind, just based on some of the things I had read, it's a fairly lonely existence. It tends to be a 24/7 job. So much of what I read also had to do with this balance of how do you stay healthy and lead a company when you're all in. And so my top three personal goals, and again, this is from a 21-year-old's head, so you have to take it with a grain of salt. One of them was to nurture three lifelong friendships. And in my mind, what that meant is no matter how busy I was, I had to choose the three people who were going to be my friends forever. The second was I needed to engage in a team sport. So find a team, and not a solo sport, but a team sport, so that there was interaction on a level playing ground. So you're one of a team. You're not leading that team. And the third, which still makes me laugh today, is to get comfortable eating out alone. And I put that in there because I thought you're going to be traveling a lot. And so many people at 21, you know, it's frightening to think you're ever going to be eating alone anywhere. But I thought you need to get so comfortable with yourself that you can enjoy travel time. And so I did all this. I was, when I traveled early on as a merchant, and we would have an extra few days that we could either between Europe and Asia, or if we were traveling somewhere and I didn't have to be home or back in the office until Monday or Tuesday, I would actually go and spend 2 or 3 days in Bali by myself. And it was not comfortable to begin with. It was horrifying, actually. In fact, I used to pretend that I really was with somebody, and I keep looking at my watch to see if, you know, so anyone who was looking at me knew that I was like waiting for something. So that was initially. But I became very, very comfortable with doing things that I wanted to do for me, and and not relying on having someone else to do things with. On the team sports, I joined a volleyball team, and I made a decision I was not going to be the captain of that volleyball team, that I would fall in as one of the players, which was an incredible experience for me, because I always think I know the answers and I know the vision and I can always coach. And I found myself thinking, no, you need to just be a player, Betsy. Just enjoy being a player. And then I had my health objectives, because health is really, really tough. Health, I did not address until I left Hot Topic, and then became crazy about diet and nutrition and, you know, interval training. And it was really amazing, the transformation that has happened to me over the past 10 years. But it was the one goal that I did not achieve on my 21-year-old timetable, because I just couldn't get to it, but I'm trying to catch up now.
The important thing is that it's still on the list and you're still working towards it. And I also appreciate that you've shared that it's 24/7. It's hard to fit something else in when you need to be available 24/7. And we know that retail is high demand and never stops. So I think that is exciting. I would love to hear also about, I think about the team, and I think about the need to collaborate, especially in today's environment. And you know, I think that there's a element of functional expertise that's important, but that willingness to really branch out and find those that are experts. So do you think that aided in your ability to step back from a leadership role and collaborate in a different way? Do you think that team sports activity assisted in that?
Probably subconsciously. I don't know that it was that consciously I made the connection. You know, I think more so I knew I worked for a lot of tough bosses, many who gave me an example not to follow. My very first boss at the Broadway department store, her name was Linda. She was a fantastic leader. And thank goodness I worked for her early on, because everybody in between was really, really tough. But I always thought to myself, okay, here's a list of all the things I'm not going to do. But one of the things I really want to do when I move myself into a leadership position is I want that collaborative spirit. And what that means is you have to hire people around you that share that particular value. And so when I was at Hot Topic, even before I was CEO, you know, I really treasured the talent search piece of the job, because I knew that every person that I brought into the mix would affect the dynamic in a big way. And I wanted to be super purposeful about it. And I met a gentleman when I was at Miller's Outpost who was an organizational psychologist, absolutely phenomenal. And he had tested me young, and he had said, after he had done all my testing, he said, you know, few people have inductive, deductive, and creative thinking. You can do anything you want to do. But, you know, one of the things that we really need to work on is how do you architect a team? Because you believe that you can get through anything. And sometimes you're not going to be able to get through anything, especially as your job becomes more complicated and as you have more and more people whose lives you're impacting from your decisions. And so one of the things we need to work on is how do you architect a team that has equal parts differences from you and equal parts similarities to you? And we want you to be really clear about where it is that you look for similarities and where it is that you look for complementary skills. And so that was at 27 years old. So I'm so grateful for that conversation, for those many conversations, because as I looked at teams and the whole idea of collaboration, I very clearly knew what exactly am I looking for similarly and differently for every person that I hired. And I think that translated in, it became muscle memory. So by the time that I was a CEO at 39 years old, it was just the way I thought about everything. It was the way that I thought about reorganizing areas in the company. It was the way I thought about putting together a team for Torrid for a new concept. It was the way I thought about the leadership team and how do we put together a great team that has, you know, the ability to collaborate in a way that we can handle sustained business and in a way that we can handle the ups and downs of a consumer business.
Yeah, and certainly led to so many years of incredible success for Hot Topic. You know, some of the unique things, and it makes a lot of sense based off of what you're sharing around collaboration and just the openness. I think about some of the things that you did at Hot Topic, such as the remodel at the corporate office, where there were no longer walls dividing people, that really brought everybody together. You know, can you share a little bit about your thought process when that change occurred?
Sure. I am a shared energy person. And one of the gifts that I was also, I also noticed early on, actually, I didn't notice it. I can't take credit for noticing myself. Other people noticed it, and then I had to deal with it, was the intuition part of my spirit and the need to be in contact with other people and to share energy with other people. And to be, if I walk into a room and I know the mood of the room, or I can tell the person over in the corner is not having a good day, all those things come in very, very handy as a CEO, as you're trying to gauge and constantly take the temperature of a company. And when you're in retail, you need to be able to walk into a store and know immediately what's the vibe. Certainly operationally, I can tell whether they're doing well. I've got sales reports. I can, you know, look at the selling floor and see how things look, how the merchandise looks. But the ability to walk in and know how the team is feeling was really important to me. And I was lucky when I joined Hot Topic because Orv Madden, who was the founder, believed in open offices as well. And so even our small offices were open. And so to me, when we went to the much larger office where eventually I spent a decade being a CEO, I was really committed to taking that shared energy and amping it up. And was told by many people, it's too big of a space. there's too much noise, there's going to be too much distraction with, you know, 10,000 team members and 600 between the office and the DC at the time. You're going to need private spaces. You are going to need your own office. You can't run a company and have everybody out in the open and have everybody be able to hear you. And I took that as a challenge because I believe that when you walk into the office in the morning, you can totally script your day based on how it feels between the front door and walking to what was my wall, basically. And I loved it. And I loved the accessibility because the other thing I wanted to do that was on my list is I wanted to be really accessible. Some people think about the company as it must have been democratic where everybody gets a vote. That wasn't it. You know, my mind, listen, everyone can give feedback, but at the end of the day, we're going to make decisions. And some of you will be happy and some of you won't. But what's more important is that you understand how the decision was made and that I understand all of the feedback and all of the opinions on the particular decision. And I felt that being open and being accessible, and every time that I walked to the restroom or walked to the kitchen or walked to the front lobby, I could talk to three or four people. I felt like that set an example of accessibility that I thought really important. It was not easy because every leader that came in from an organization that was used to having their own office, there was a detox period and, trying to adjust and what the music is playing. I don't like this music. I don't know if I can handle this music. You know, just wait 2 weeks. You won't even hear the music. So it was a process as we continued to grow and as new leaders came on board to maintain that level of accessibility and the physical culture of the office. But, you know, all you need is a few people who drink the Kool-Aid and all of a sudden it becomes, listen, this can be done. So I was very fortunate also to be able to have a couple of people who were also senior leaders that understood the benefits of an open office.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so early on, and not just what you're sharing, but also what I know about Hot Topic, is there is a distinction between culture that is kind of the buzzword that everybody's using nowadays and engagement. And I think you understood engagement very early on and what synergized people. And, you know, that existed at the office, but it also existed obviously in stores. And by the way, being a DM all those years, I call when you walk in the store and it's not good, the retail funk. It's like, I don't know what is happening here, but something isn't good. So you have to be able to assess quickly. So I appreciate that. What else do you think drove Hot Topic being on the best company to work for? I mean, there are not very many companies, number one, that are on that list, let alone multiple years. What do you think was really driving that level of engagement?
Well, I think a couple of things. I mean, partially, I believe, you know, we all believed that the magic of Hot Topic happened between the sales associate and the customer. And everything in the company needs to support that connection. And so the store teams became the most important teams in the organization. And when you make your decisions based on the customer, and certainly there's the end use customer, but I used to say all the time, all of us who work in the office, our customer is not just the end use customer, it's our stores. And so when you make your decisions based on the store teams, what's good for the store teams, what's good for the customer, what's the fair thing to do and the right thing to do? How do we make sure our programs are addressing the needs of those two constituencies? I think you create a place that is nice to work in. I used to say, listen, when everybody goes home, people work so hard at Hot Topic, and you're talking about teenagers and people in their 20s making no money because retail does not pay great, making no money, but working because they love what they do, passionate about music, passionate about each other. And you know, it's hard. It's hard work to be out in the stores every single day, stocking shelves and dealing with the public. And so I think, you know, we were really dedicated to making sure that we could answer the question on anything we change, what does this have to do with the customer? How does this positively impact the customer? If it doesn't positively impact the customer, we really need to rethink that. So I think, you know, as far as the accolades go, nice to have, but wouldn't have changed what we did, because I just think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I, you know, it's interesting too, because I don't know if they still do it today, but I do know that Hot Topic also measured culture and engagement. I mean, it's truly the only place that I knew that it was actually a measurable on a review, where there was metric performance reviewed, your competency base, but how was your competency base determined? Truly through what your team is saying about you and what your leader is saying, and then what you feel yourself. I remember a question on that. It was, you know, does my district manager engage guests? And it's like, your job isn't there just to drive the number or to tell people what to do, but also to lead by example and ensure you're staying connected as well. So all of those things definitely tie together. So I would like to hear a little bit more about that 2000 being a CEO, not very many female CEOs. Can you share with us a little bit of what that experience was like, and maybe some of your key learnings of truly, Betsy, pioneering what all of us aspire to today, and that's to be a leader in an inclusive environment?
Well, I had always thought of myself as going to be a CEO. So, and again, I had my plan. So in my mind, when Orv said to me, you know, I think it's time for me to step aside and for you to take the reins, I was like, yes, it is. I'm ready. And I really had, because I had worked for so many people over the course of time, I really had not experienced gender issues. Maybe a few here and there, but I was fairly confident about my abilities. And so I didn't really experience it up until that point. And then I became a CEO. And then you're thrown into another world. You're thrown into, it's a public company. You've got board members. You have institutional investors who you're meeting with on a regular basis. You have analysts that write reports on your business. And you now are the person that every major vendor wants to talk to. And that's when I realized, wow, you guys don't work with a lot of women. The number of times that I was referred to as honey and sweetie, people would say to me, wow, it's amazing that a young woman can be a CEO. Now imagine somebody saying that to you. And, you know, amazing that a young woman can be a CEO. Nobody says amazing that an old male can be a CEO or a young male can be a CEO. And so I would just take notes in my head and think, huh, this is really strange. This is obviously what a lot of people go through throughout their entire careers. But I was so focused on architecting a balanced team that I really took most of my mind share for the first couple of years. And I was, you know, wanted so much to have a number two who could be my partner, who could handle all of the operations, and that shared my values. And I knew that it was going to be a really, really, really hard find. But I spent more time on that than I did on really anything else. And so the transition from being president to being CEO really was not that difficult, partially because a lot of my team or the team continued on. But really, I had to switch my focus to how am I going to set the company up for the next 10 years of growth? And so, you know, Hot Topic, because there was so much energy and passion within the organization, you know, I just feel really fortunate that that was the company that I was able to become CEO. And I used to call store managers on the way in every day to work. And I remember several times in the first year where I thought, gee, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I don't know if I'm smart enough to do this. I don't know if I have enough. You know, whenever I was not feeling confident, I'd pick up the phone, call a store manager and say, tell me about your day. Tell me about your customers. Tell me about your business. And I would get so much energy from them that it would just fuel me into whatever the day held. So I found little ways like that that most people don't even know about, but that reinforced that I want to lead because I love these people. I love this concept and this brand, and I love these people, and I want to do what's right for them. And when that takes over and you're not so worried about what other people think about you or whether or not you're trailblazing or whether or not somebody's thinking that, you know, you're a young female, when you really start to reorient your mind and say, what am I doing this for? What is it that brings me joy? What is my purpose? When it all becomes about the people that you are leading, everything else just falls away.
I call those purpose tokens. So I think we all have those tokens that when your bank account or your emotional bank account, personally or professionally, feel depleted, that they fill us back up. So what a great example. So if you were to spin that and just share with any women out there that have aspirations to lead at a higher level, you know, if there are two or three things that you would advise those gals to do, what would it be?
I think that the first rule is to always be prepared and to over prepare. And I still do that today in my boards. I'm the one who reads the board deck 3 times. I'm the one who studies before going into any kind of meeting. I think one of the ways to make yourself stand out is to respect the materials and the time that have gone into something before you even walk into the room. And so you can, whether you're male or you're female, I think you can stand out by being the one that's most prepared and being the person that appears, that is the most engaged at the get-go of a meeting, as opposed to requiring other people to inform you all the time. So I would say that that's at the top of my list. And even if they have nothing to do with your business, I think having those moments where you are outside of work and you are feeling really, really good and really, really strong, all of that gets fed in to your spirit, and that will come out as you are going through the rest of your day. And then I think, you know, for women especially, we need to help each other. I've always said there's 2 kinds of women: women who fight with each other and try to take each other down, and women who support each other. And we need to support each other and find those women who will support you and stay away from the women who want to take you down. And if you are in a job where your boss is a female and your boss is not super supportive of you, get out of that job, because it really is in your control. We all have choices in life, and we can, you know, I always say experiences shape us and choices define us. So we have all this experience behind us that shape who we are, but we do have choices, and we choose to stay, we choose to leave, we choose to act a certain way, we choose to feel good, we choose to feel bad. And so I think, you know, recognizing that you do have a choice who you work for and where you work, and taking the responsibility for that. We wouldn't allow that in our personal lives, but sometimes we allow that in a business environment. So I think from a female standpoint, you know, find those women who are supportive, who are strong, who will help you realize whatever goals that you have.
I appreciate so much, again, just, I love the notion of, you know, it's almost consequence, right? As it relates to, you have the choice. And I don't think as it relates to work or careers or jobs, sometimes we're stuck and we think, because it's a job, I don't get to make a personal choice, but you do. And then ultimately, what is that consequence to your choice? Maybe good. Sometimes it may be bad, but ultimately you can make that choice to correct it again if necessary. So Betsy, if you were to go back and you were to give some advice to yourself, that 21-year-old creating that amazing plan, I'm just blown away. I mean, that is truly a story I'm going to harbor for a very long time and probably share it a lot. But what would you tell yourself? What would you tell your younger self?
I would probably tell my younger self 2 things. One, to enjoy the ride. I don't know that I enjoyed all the moments that I could have. And I'm not talking about hours and hours a day, but I'm talking about being more purposeful about moments of fun. And I think I realized that at about 35 years old. But here I am trying to nurture three lifetime friendships, but I don't want to I can't take the time to go to a birthday dinner, or I can't take the time to go away on a ski trip. And I'm nurturing them in other ways, intellectual ways. And I think I would have said, we're not talking about full pendulum swing here, but you could enjoy a bit of this a little more. The second thing I would say is probably relates to the goal I did not tackle until I had retired from Hot Topic, which is the health piece of it. You know, it's so important. You realize it more as you're older, that had you just done some things differently when you were younger, they would impact you now. But when you're younger, you don't think about those things. And so the idea of getting healthy, the idea of great nutrition, the idea of aerobic and weight training and those things that I know are so important now, I would have made them mandatory, not optional, in my 20s. And I think part of it is you're fairly athletic. You come out of school, you're fairly athletic. I did my team sport. I thought that was really good. But I wasn't really in my head tying everything together and saying, you know, how do you meditate? Do you do breathing? Are you careful about nutrition? You know, are you exercising in the right way? I wish I would have done that. And I would tell anybody who was in their 20s that that is as important a component of being successful as a leader than the quality of your work and your ability to interact with others. So they all go hand in hand with how healthy you are as a leader.
I think it goes back to demanding environment. And you get in that mode of I'm just working, not realizing the efficiency and the productivity increase that would occur if you gave yourself back that time. And I've discovered a similar thing, and just even my creativity. It's like, oh my gosh, where was that creativity when it was on burnout? And I was just in the motion, going through the motions. So it's such great advice. So one last question before we wrap up, and that's really, how would you define happiness or success?
Well, I think success and happiness are not separate, at least for me. I think being successful equates to a certain level of happiness for me. You know, I used to judge it based on metrics. How much, how fast, how productive, how many stores, enterprise value, how much income. I mean, it was all metric based. And something switched probably a few years into being a CEO when we first saw a tough year. And the market still continues to define success as your numbers. And I'm thinking to myself, we've got such an amazing brand that's affecting so many people with an amazing team. That in itself is such a huge success in my head that I need to be able to balance the soft and the hard. So when I look at success and happiness now, and this is, 9 years after leaving Hot Topic, but as I'm working with boards and working with younger CEOs and founders, you know, I think there's a balance there of how much joy are you bringing to yourself, to your team, and to the consumer? And the other piece of it are the more left brain metrics, but it has to be a blend of two. One without the other, for me, I can't be happy, because I need some sort of validation. If you've grown up in retail, you get sales every single day. So you're a little programmed that the number tells you how well you did. But I think that there has to be the even piece of it, because all sales and no emotional substance is a void for me. And all emotional substance and no sales is also a void for me. So I have to have balance between the two. So even today, as I am crazy about, how do I be healthy and how do I make myself the best possible thinker and feeler based on how my body is running, I need to feel it as I'm exercising, but I also need to see it with my whoop strap. I want to know exactly how many calories and what my heart rate is. And so to me, it's a blend of both.
Well, Betsy, I appreciate so much you taking this time to share with us your knowledge and your perspective. And I especially love how you define success, as I know that it's super easy to just get caught up in the everyday and the measurables, but really truly looking at it from the inside as well as the outside.
A quick reminder, if you haven't already reserved your space for our free 10 Guiding Principles for Leaving Nowhere Success Shop, go to eventbrite.com. Search Candace Willey or the 10 Guiding Principles for Leaving Nowhere. Remember, your success begins with investing in yourself. Until next time, success buddies, subscribe and review this podcast on Apple or the podcast platform of your choice. Thank you for joining today's episode of Leaving Nowhere. Here's to you and you accelerating your life and career.